Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live from our new studios at Meat House. With me today, I have Heath Elson-San, I have Wesley Coleman. And for the next hour or so, we're going to be talking more Saints and useless information than anyone needs to know about. So grab a drink, sit back, relax.
Because we're going to do the New Orleans Saints and the Dome Patrol Network, BS and Beer style.
Tonight on BS and Beer Radio Broadcast Corporation Incorporated, it's the Action Suspense Airline Highway at 9:30. Followed by this year's award-winning suspense thriller, Camp Beast. Next, it's hilarious family fun suitable for all ages with Drew, Sean, and Mickey. Then, it's Sex in the Cell Block, the hot new show that's too racy for daytime. That's Sex in the Cell Block at 11 tonight. Then, it's Saints Talk with Dave, Tomas, Heath, and the BS and Beer podcast crew. Every night here on the BS&B Radio Broadcast Corporation Incorporated, a limited liability corporation.
All right. Hey, fellas, we played the Panthers 33-7. I feel like the Saints, I have to check the statistics, but the Saints allowed about the same amount of points as they intercepted the ball on Sunday. Wesley, we had our superstars stepped up, and I'm talking about Carr, Austin Carr, and that other guy's name, who I didn't even know was on the roster.
Haley,
yeah. Matter of fact, during the game, one of you guys said something, or maybe even Nick Underhill, I saw a tweet pop up on my phone. It said, Haley in the slot. And I'm like, I just assumed that was a receiver for the Panthers or something was in the slot. I'm like, so, I mean, I want to say our depth is incredible, and I believe that's the case. Having said that, this is beyond – you know, it has to be good coaching. It has to be the right type of scheme. And then it also helps when you play in a 5-win team.
Yeah. There's no excuse for Grant Haley stepping up and leading the team in tackles and getting an interception. Also having a quarterback hit. It's putting him in a good position. It's nice when everyone else is doing their job, but I mean, Ken Crawley played one play and got an interception. anybody get an interception yesterday? I'm pretty sure we could have put you in, Dave. I think you could have got an interception yesterday.
I'm ready. I was ready. Yeah,
we dropped two.
Yeah, we dropped two. Had a couple drops too. Yeah,
yes, insane. I told him I was ready to play some. What I lack in size at the running back position, I make up for by being really slow. So I think I could have helped, but we didn't need it. Heath. You know, we bring in some people. I say bring in. We haven't seen them all season. All of a sudden, we need them, and they rush for 100 yards.
Yeah. I mean, big shout out to Ty Montgomery. I, quite frankly, when we signed him, I was like, meh. You know, I mean, he's never really done that much. I wasn't that impressed. He hasn't played all year. I figured there was a good reason for that. But, man, you know, he came in, he played really well, and he looked good. He looked fast. He looked spry. You know, I mean, he really did. He surprised me, you know, and I mean, went for 105 yards. So, man, great, great job by him. You know, I honestly thought we might see the rookie run more than him. You know, I thought we might see Tony Jones do more.
I was going to say that I use this analogy, and I know I've told this story before, but Montgomery kind of strikes me as a guy that I agree with you. He's never been super productive. But he is an athlete. I mean, he's quick. He has vertical. He can play several positions. And I don't know if a team says, man, let's sign that guy and make him our number one running back or, a top two or three receiver, that he would be super productive. But I always use that story where you go play pickup basketball. a guy gets picked up third and he's tall and he can run the court and he scores all these points. But when you pick him first, well, he's expected to score. He's expected to be the primary shooter and he can't do it. And that's where I feel like Montgomery kind of fits, is that, man, if he's just an additional guy on the team, he yeah. can really make a difference. If you expect him to be your guy, I don't know if he can do it. But Wesley, give me some thoughts on these guys who stepped up.
Now, I was super excited when we signed Ty Montgomery in the offseason. I thought, not because of just what he could do, but because I thought he was a better version of a hybrid of Cadet or Tommy Lee Lewis. Like, if I think what I said was, he's a version of those guys if those guys were supposed to have been played professional football.
Right.
And having said that, if we ignore the first 15 games of the season, I just want to tell you guys, I was right. I was completely right on Ty Montgomery.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. Yeah, yeah. You need to go back, and we need to find that on social media.
I tell you what, he's pretty damn good for a fourth guy, you know?
Hell yeah.
Now, while we're talking about, and I mean, just to piggyback on that, Heath, that comment, it's just, it really is amazing when your entire running back room goes down, you already down receivers, and you can bring a guy like that into play. You know, you start wondering what other, it's just this versatility is so important to the team. I mean, and right now, you couldn't ask for anything better in this situation. And then when you add in, which I wasn't even thinking about till this minute, is COVID. You know, all of a sudden you have to have a guy that's like, hey, all our quarterbacks are gone. Oh, well, we got this guy that plays tight end that he plays quarterback too, per se. And I know I don't catch no crap from people about Hill. I'm just saying that, you know, he's in the tight end room. All of a sudden your quarterbacks go down. It's like, bring in Taysom Hill. Let's play quarterback and win games.
Yeah.
It's insane to me. Like, so Cat Terrell wrote a thing about this the week and how it went for Ty Montgomery. Because we're kind of shorthanded on receivers right now, they had him work as a receiver all week. Friday afternoon, they told him, hey, learn some of these running back plays. Kamara might be out. You might need to learn some of these plays just in case there's an emergency. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. On Saturday morning at 10 a.m., they said, hey, we don't have a running back on the roster. You're the starting running back and the only running back. And he's like, man, he goes, and honestly, he said he got real nervous. He said, but it all went easier than he thought. Cause you know, he never has studied our running back plays. That's not what he's been here. It's just, I can't imagine. I mean, and anybody thinking that's easy is undermining like how difficult it is with the plays that we do. And also lining up as a receiver and running against a cornerback is way different than lining up behind a quarterback and making cuts in the backfield and trying to dodge defensive linemen.
And look, when you ask awesome who picked it up, when you add to the fact that the Panthers also had a bunch of running backs down, and how many times did they fumble? Just a handoff. Well, I mean, at least twice, maybe more. And so you, it looks easy. And, you know, listen, from a guy who played high school football, you know, it's like, hey, you turn around and you hand the ball off. How hard can that be? But what you don't realize is you're dealing with a guy who's running 4-4, 4-5, offensive lineman moving extremely. The speed of the game, even on a simple handoff, the guy is making reads. He's not looking at the ball, all these different things. And for the Saints to perform the way they did, which, again, I mean, just forget about that he ran for 100 plus yards. He didn't fumble. We didn't miss a handoff. We didn't have a lot of miscommunication, although I think there were some breakdowns in, we're doing this on Monday, so I haven't really had a chance to look at the game again, but my mind's eye says we had some breakdowns, which you can almost expect in pass protection, especially early. I think the Panthers said, hey, we're going after Breeze and see if those running backs can block. So, Heath, you have anything you want to throw on top of these people who stepped up and helped us win this game?
No, you know, just surprise, you know, with Montgomery, we already talked about Haley, you know, Ken Crawley and his one play. I mean, it's funny how much, you know, now we got the flip side of that, you know, as you were talking about missed assignments and all, you know, Garrett Griffin comes to mind immediately. you know, this is a guy that's been hanging around on a practice squad for what, about 23 years now, it seems like. And, you know, he gets in the game yesterday, and it's hard to say which one was worse. Him missing the block after Drew Brees sat there and called it out, or Drew Brees himself standing there and getting creamed after he called out the play. It's like, I don't know what happened on that deal, but they were obviously well aware of it. And
that particular play, Breeze practically, if not literally, walked and said, block that guy right there.
Right there. Literally, that guy hit, hit him. He's coming.
Yeah.
My goodness.
And look, in his defense, I did. Okay. When those things happen, then you start paying attention. I don't know how you guys are, but when I have certain guys on my mind, I tend to gravitate to those guys and watch them. And I started, he did play. Again, I didn't watch everything, but I saw plays. I'm like, okay, well, he made that block. He, you know, Heath might give him another week. So, but let's transition into something I was messaging you guys about this morning. It's injuries and this bye week that obviously the Saints didn't get the bye that they were hoping for. Everything else fell in place. They won. Seattle came back and won. And the Bears, which I think was obviously the biggest challenge, failed. They gave the Packers a good game in the beginning. Aaron Rodgers was pretty I think they said he was literally he may have been perfect in the first half, meaning no incompletions. But I'm not exactly sure about that. But then
he had a perfect rating. He did have one drop that it was a drop that would have been a touchdown too.
So the Bears in the second half fell apart, and which is kind of what you expect. But one of the things we talked about is the importance of the bye. This is the first year where the number two seed doesn't have the bye. And we talked about using this game as a bye week. Having said that, the way things went down, if the Saints didn't win, they would have been in the third seed. So I may be trying to be a homer a little bit here, looked at some of the guys who rested. Michael Thomas should come in like an excited high school girl on a prom night. He's really not played much. Now, again, he had an injury, but that injury, he did play with the injury. And the Saints gave him 3 more weeks to let that injury go from, you know, him being 70% to.
Are you saying he's going to be walking funny the day after the game?
It could be, you know. Could be, yes. So, and then let's say, okay, Breeze. Now, of course, he has to get over the broken ribs, but, you know, the shoulder, the arm strength looks a little bit better. He should be in a better position. Heath says, well, Breeze rested up last year, and he was garbage in the Vikings game. I'm like, yeah, but he was well-rested garbage, okay?
Yeah. But you can always count on me to bring it down a few notches.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely. You know. Don't want to get you too excited about it. Now, who are some other guys T-Rex, he got a game off and he probably only played half a game this week. Harris is another guy. Not only am I talking about guys who are coming back, but not guys who are coming back from a serious knee injury who, like, God, we hope we can get them good enough to get on the field. These are guys who might have had a neck injury or COVID or something that when they get back on the field, they should be 100%. Kamara.
Even if they weren't hurt, like Gardner Johnson got a couple of weeks off. Like, I mean, for whatever reason, he got that time off. I mean, he's going to be feeling better coming back. P-Rob, they activated into practice this past week. Probably could have pushed him and made him play this week, but they made the right decision. No, let's get him to 100% just in case he needs to come in and make some plays.
How about Harris? You know?
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure. What was his injury?
It was a stinger, but it had to be more significant than a stinger because, I mean, you don't miss this many weeks, then go on IR for 3 weeks with a stinger. So it had to be some neck issue that they're defining as a stinger, which does concern me a little bit, you know, about how reckless, and I hate to, maybe reckless is the wrong word. He runs in there for a little guy with authority, and you would hate for him to lose a little bit of his aggressiveness.
Hey, another guy that's been off all season that should be fresh is Davenport.
Okay, are you trying to start a fight? What's going on here?
Yeah, I can't pass up an opportunity. I don't know what's going on with this guy, man, but I called it a couple of weeks ago, but it looks like even Granderson's blowing past this guy now. It was funny on the one sack. They both got to the same point at the same time, but in the end, it was Granderson. You were talking about Davenport's involved in a lot. I'm really just giving him crap. He is disruptive, and he's around a lot of plays that he just doesn't ultimately make. He was standing right next to Granderson on one of Granderson's sacks, but it wound up being Granderson that got it, not Davenport.
As a person who has been a huge defender of Davenport, I even got to the point where I've noticed that, I mean, maybe part of me doesn't want to believe after giving up as much as we gave up for him, that he's not as good as Hendrickson. The fact of the matter, he's not. And I'm not saying, I'm talking about rushing the passer. As a run defender, I do believe he's much better. but there is something, he's not even being as disruptive. Now, I sent y'all a text and kind of admitted that yesterday. Then he had two pressures, two plays in a row right after I said that. So maybe I need to text more.
So, to be fair, and I've like given you a hard time about Davenport, the all 22 is not out, but I've seen two people that track all this stuff saying that Davenport actually led the team with quarterback pressures yesterday. He had five, Granderson had four, Hendrickson only had two pressures. He just got a sack out of it. But Davenport, in what looks like, I mean, it'll probably come out with the all 22 is that he actually led the team in quarterback pressures. It does. He's got two tackles and one quarterback hit and no sacks.
I think that's been the case, hasn't it? He has been leading in pressure. He doesn't get the payoff.
I don't understand. Honestly, I don't understand how it works. I have never seen someone who gets so much pressure, but yet never finishes. And that's a thing. I mean, listen, this has come from somebody who has defended him to death. And he somehow, whatever the reason, he doesn't finish. And I don't know what it is. I just don't understand how he can put that much pressure on the quarterback and never get a sack.
If that makes the quarterback speed up and leads to five interceptions, though, I mean, it's good. And Heath has been talked about all year, like, which does it come from the front end or the back end? Which one is making the other one play well? Like, they're both playing well, but is it the defensive line or is it the cornerbacks that's doing well? I mean, the defensive line was the ones that caused a few of those interceptions yesterday. But the cornerbacks did a good job, too. Like, they were close to the receivers. Every time, even those receptions, they were right on them. Yards after the catch didn't exist yesterday.
I will say, and this is kind of going off in the weeds here, as I usually like to do, I remember the days when the Saints' defensive backfield wasn't that good. And now you might have completions, but there's a defender usually right there to tackle them, or they make the tackle. Back in the day, it used to be a guy running open, catch the ball, run up this field for another 15 yards, and maybe even get out of bounds without even being tackled. So the point is that when you're that close, quarterbacks are generally going to get the ball there. But when you're that close, every once in a while, they're going to throw that ball behind, or or they won't make that throw. So that's the difference, is this team, everyone is generally going to be close. So I don't know. I do believe there is different levels of football. There's preseason football. There's the first half of the season football. There's late season football. There's playoff football. And it seems like the Saints have been like, schematically, we're going to beat this team, so let's not do a whole bunch. And so maybe, again, the Homer glasses, that defense hasn't seemed to be unreal, but they gave up 7 points. Okay, who they give it up to? But I still feel like there's so much more. I do not feel like they have their foot completely on the gas pedal. All right, good input there.
I think there is a level of what they can do. And I think that against some of the quarterbacks that are going to try and stay in the pocket and hold the ball, we're going to end up getting some sacks on them. Having said that, like, it's pretty nice to have this option to where, yes, we didn't necessarily get a bye week, but playing the Panthers and the Bears back-to-back weeks in must-win games, I mean, they're not bye weeks, but I think we'll be able to get some people rested in the fourth quarter next week too. People were screaming for Breeze to come out in the third quarter when this game was clearly out of hand. But I mean, I also support, like, we need to get him some reps too. So, I mean, I think there was a good mix of getting him his reps, not getting him hurt. But I think that going into next week, I think it's a good situation of, I don't know if it could have fell any better than us playing the Bears.
Right. Well, Heath, let me ask you real quick, because I actually had that as a note, surprised by how long Breeze was in the game. Now, I don't suggest any game that you pull a quarterback out. I mean, I guess there could be circumstances.
Unless you're the Eagles. Pull your quarterback if you're the Eagles. Get him out of
okay.
There.
Now, that's a whole thing we could talk about at the end of the game. That's insane. Yeah. But are you surprised that they didn't pull Breeze out, let's say, just a little bit into the fourth quarter?
No, I'm not. And the reason is, as we talked about texting this week, I'm not sure. I actually kind of like the fact, in a way, that the Saints didn't get the bye week. I don't really know that this team needed an entire week off. And part of it is because Breeze was still knocking the rust off coming back. I mean, and so getting him more reps in this game. And I think the important part of that is that he was never really, other than that one blown assignment there by Griffin where it wasn't like Breeze had been getting battered all day long and hitting. It was pretty clean.
True.
And so I don't think there was any real worry at that point that he had taken, you know, I think Sean Payton's thing, let's get him the reps. Let's get the timing down. They're not beating him up and everything. And he didn't feel like there was danger leaving him into the game a little bit longer.
You see, I agree with that. And I mean, here's the next thing too. And this kind of goes into Wesley's point is next week we're playing a foe. And I know people are saying, listen, you can't overlook anybody. Let's get that out of the way. I get it. But we're not the team. We're talking about the team. The Bears are not the Vikings of last year. The Vikings win 10 games last year. They had a little spell where they had a bunch of injuries. The Vikings were a much better team than the Bears are this year. And I think that we may be looking at a similar situation. And to have a game like we have with the Bears, getting some guys back like Thomas and Harris and other people. And again, I don't want to downplay it so much like it's a tune-up game, but quite frankly, if the Saints are what they should be and what we expect them to be, this should be nothing more than a tune-up game. If the Saints are a Super Bowl team, if the Saints lose to the Bears, they were never that good to begin with and they don't deserve it. Wesley Heath.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I had said that like that before they announced what day the playoff game was going to be played on. If we played on Saturday against the Bears, I'm fine with that because even without Kamara, if we lose to the Bears, we're not a Super Bowl team. So you know what? If we're going to lose in the playoffs and not win the Super Bowl, let's lose in the first round. And I mean, I don't need to get my heart like completely ripped out later. Like, let's just go ahead and like shoot me in the head once instead of four times in the body.
Right. I mean, let you bleed out on the floor.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, Kamara is great. He is a huge part of our team. We are so much better than the Bears on paper with roster and all. We beat them earlier this year with no wide receivers. Like, seriously, no wide receiver that had any business maybe even being in the NFL. I mean, right.
Let's add to that. And they were inexperienced. I mean, at least now you could say like a guy like Callaway or the other guys that they're, you know, marching out there on the field. At least now it's the end of the season and they've had more time to work with it. So when we played the Bears, you're talking about not only were they not name brand experienced receivers, they were undrafted guys from the practice squad.
If you would have told me at the start of the season, like, and this is a reference to yesterday, not the Bears game. If I told you that in the same game, Marcus Callaway, little Jordan Humphrey, Austin Carr, Adam Troutman, Juwan Johnson, and Ty Montgomery were all going to have a catch, I'd be like, oh, okay, we lost that game. I mean, that's the game yesterday. All those guys had at least one catch yesterday.
Oh, the plane crashed on the way to the game. Yeah.
My goodness. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I left something out that I found to be pretty interesting. Heath Easton, Nick Easton, came back and left the game again with a concussion. I mean, is this guy going to have to shut it down for the season, for the playoffs? Or
you know, quite possibly. Because that happens sometimes, right? The concussions, once they start, they kind of come in bunches because, you know, honestly, you're not truly healed when you came back from the last one. You know, he cleared the concussion protocol, you know, wink, wink, air quotes, you know. It takes longer than that to get over a concussion. And so, I don't know. We'll see. You know what I didn't notice yesterday was when Hurst was in the game a few times. Was he in there for Armstead or was he in there at a different position?
There was one time Armstead, I don't even know what happened to him. I didn't see the replay, but he came out of the game. But I think he was only out for one play. Now, I didn't notice. You see, he was up and the kid from LSU, Clapp, was inactive. So if you saw any jumbos, more than likely that's who it was.
Okay, that might have been what it was.
So even Ruiz only played seven snaps yesterday. So he barely got in the game. But Hurst played 17 snaps. Armstead played 56. He played 88% of the snaps. So he might have played a little bit at the end. Armstead looked like he tweaked something but was over telling the trainer, I'm not going in the 10, I'm fine.
Well, how many did Easton play?
Easton played 89% of the snaps.
Okay.
57 snaps. So
he played almost McCoy,
Pete, and Ramchek played 100%.
Well, that's good that it looks like Pete managed to get through the game without getting injured. I'm not trying to be funny, but in a way, you can't really say that without being funny.
I'll just real quick, while we're talking about offensive line, I sent this to you guys, and I think anybody should go look at it if you can see it. Teron Armstead made one of the most ridiculous plays I've ever seen a professional athlete make the other day. some of it was awareness wise, but the middle linebacker blitzing from the opposite side of the line, that between Armstead and the linebacker is four offensive and defensive linemen. They're all 6'4", 6'5". He shouldn't have been able to see the 6 foot tall linebacker. And he takes three super fast steps just to jab him with his hand so that the guy doesn't run through Breeze. Like, he would have gotten there after Breeze released the ball and probably would have gotten a penalty for the hit. But Armstead, one, seeing the guy makes no sense to me how he saw him. But sprinting across, I mean, it was just a ridiculous athletic play that I've never seen an offensive lineman make before.
It's incredible. If you haven't seen this, you need – it's on Twitter – it's incredible. Obviously Armstead lined up at left tackle, sees the linebacker blitzing, and it was a delayed blitz of sorts. I don't remember the whole play. I didn't see the whole play cause it was just a clip, but Armstead had to have seen, like, okay, we need to check him. And the guy went from one, like, let's say the middle to the right side or something. Cause I mean, how he would even know, and then literally went from the left side of the line to pick up a blitzing linebacker on the right side of the line. I mean, we know how athletic he is. That was just incredible. I saw a non Saints media guy on Twitter make some huge suggestion about how good Armstead was. And it was something like the biggest most impactful player that's not a skill position player in the NFL. I don't know about all that. And it's hard to say how good you, because a left tackle is really good when you never hear his name. It's like, but a defensive end is really good when you hear his name all the time. So which one? It's hard to call a left tackle great when you just never hear his name, you know. But the thing is, with those guys, with Ramczyk on the right side, if we have a healthy interior, that means everything. That means everything to this team and to the Saints and how they play ball. You know, some of the things we looked at, not been able to run the ball whenever Breeze wasn't in the game, man. Once Breeze is in the game, teams have to respect the pass. I think that it's obviously incredibly important. Unless y'all have something on that, I'm going to just transition. Let's talk about the big picture of the NFC playoffs. I don't know if I was saying this weeks ago, not that I think it's groundbreaking, but I think I was just talking about it before people were worried about that. And our path to the play, to the Super Bowl. Not that I think it will happen, especially you had Tampa Bay. Evans is injured. Don't know how long he'll be out, but he obviously hyperextended his knee. He's going to at least miss this week. So the Saints are going to get the Bears. If things go the way I thought they would go, then Tampa Bay would win against the NFC East, whoever it is. I think it's the Redskins now, right?
Correct.
And then that means that, one of them's we probably get Seattle if Seattle beats the Rams, which I expected. But then I watched Seattle. How do they have 14 wins? Or not 14, what is it, 12 wins? How do they have 12 wins? I don't know. I have no idea how that team has that many wins. But
playing the Rams and the 49ers and the same way our division's bad. I mean, everybody keeps trying to say that their whole division is good. I don't think any of their divisions as good as people have said. Like, they don't play well on both sides of the ball.
Unlike our division, I think they have four decent teams. Like, they have four 8-8 teams or 9-7 teams, which can beat you any week. We know that. So I'm not trying to diminish it, but they're not like four 12 win teams. You know what I'm saying? Yep. But anyway, so my path was Seattle comes to New Orleans, we beat them. And then here's where it gets interesting. Not that I think it would happen. I just think that it could happen. Is Tampa Bay goes to Green Bay and beats Green Bay, then we have Tampa Bay at home. Now, obviously on paper, that sounds great because Tampa Bay's already beat and didn't just beat. They beat the brakes off of Green Bay. And we've beat Tampa Bay twice. So obviously if it works out that way, we're the greatest and we win. Yay. The fact of the matter is, I say all that, but if they go and beat Green Bay, I will be terrified of Tampa Bay, right? Terrified. But to me, that's our path. Having said that, I don't know. I have just heard somebody on NFL Network saying that they think Washington is going to upset Tampa Bay. Heath, what are your thoughts on the playoffs? That's my scenario. You have something different, or you just want to talk about what I just laid out?
Well, no, I would prefer to play Tampa than Green Bay. That's just my own personal, I know there's the thought of trying to beat the same team three times in the season and all that, but I just think we match up better with Tampa. In the end, I think Rodgers and company with Green Bay are better overall than Tampa, at least offensively. So I would prefer it to go that way. Now, Washington, you know, at times this season, Washington has been and can be a good, with Smith at quarterback and everything and healthy. And, you know, yeah, there's somebody that can pull an upset. I don't really expect it, but they are capable of it, I guess, you know.
Wesley?
Yeah, I think the thing that's what's going to be an interesting thing that some people are going to – the people that like defense are going to jump onto this week is Chase Young and Montez Sweat are two defensive ends that get after the quarterback no matter who's blocking for them. And they are two guys that will turn around a game. Tampa Bay can't run the ball very well, and Tom Brady's going to be in the pocket. They don't have a good offensive line for blocking. Like, this is a game that somebody like Chase Young and Montez Sweat has played great too. I think he has 9.5 sacks this year, but Chase Young is a beast. I don't care how many years he's been in the league. Him being a rookie is amazing.
They're no Trey Hendricksons, but they can get the job.
Yeah, I mean, but they're going to make Tom Brady. There's going to be pressure on him, and he's going to be uncomfortable at some point. But whether that leads to interceptions or sacks or fumbles, who knows, but Washington's going to have to put that pressure on him.
I just want to throw in that I don't subscribe to this, you know, to be the best, you got to beat the best. And I know I'm repeating some stuff that I texted you. I don't care. I don't care if the entire offense of the Green Bay Packers, the Friday before it go all COVID, go to the, I don't care. I want to get to the Super Bowl. And I mentioned nobody cared how banged up we were when we went to Seattle with a better record with Jimmy Graham out and all the injuries that we had and lost to those guys. Nobody says, oh, look at Beast Mode. But the Saints were really banged up that day. Nobody cares. I don't care. Give me the team that just got their quarterback injured or somebody's on COVID. I don't care. Win, that's all I care about. And you know what? 10 years from now, I'll be talking fondly about how good that team was. When, you know, remember when old Austin Carr beat those guys and caught that touchdown pass, won the Super Bowl? I don't care. I don't care. I don't want to play the Packers if they're the better team. I do think we can beat them. So don't get me wrong, but what I'm saying, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if their plane breaks down, they have to forfeit the game. I don't care. I want to win.
Yeah, there's a possibility of us playing the Bears this week and somehow playing the Washington the next week, or playing the Rams and the Washington to make it to the Super Bowl. I'm fine with that. I mean, I don't think any of that's going to happen.
Right.
But I don't have an ego about like, well, look what we did on the way to the Super Bowl. Don't care.
But, you know, cause I use that as a source of pride. If you look at the path that we took to win our Super Bowl, I mean, that's a star studded, you know, Favre, star studded that I can't remember his name.
Kurt Warner.
Kurt Warner. And then Manning, you know, that's a hell of a road to get to your first Super Bowl. You know, I don't care if we beat Billy Bob Smith, Tommy Johnson, and Tanya Franklinson. I don't care. I just want to win these games, get the Super Bowl, get Breeze this ring. And you know what? Let's I don't know if this is, we have plenty of time. We've kind of covered a lot. Drew Breeze and his future. I've seen conversations. Maybe I'm trying to expose Wesley and his opinions here. After this season, I mean, is it time? Now, we already heard the reports, Breeze. I don't know where the media, I don't think Breeze walks around bragging that, like, yeah, man, I only got two games left. Oh, I got the playoffs left. But they said that it's a foregone conclusion that he's retiring. I think that's what most people think. So I don't think it's too far fetched. But what do you think about that? And I'll start with Wesley.
I believe it's true. I think that there's enough smoke, there's fire from last season. I think he was done last season, had told a few people in a close group to him that he was done, and then changed his mind, whether that was him or maybe whether it was the rumors of Tom Brady coming to New Orleans that we discussed earlier this year. He decided to come back. I think that, and then Peyton's even said some stuff in interviews about, has said like, oh, you know, in Drew's last year. And they're like, oh, are you saying it's Drew's last year? He's like, no, I'm just saying like, if it's his last year. I think that it's the comment's been made a couple times. Teron Armstead saying Super Bowl or bust makes sense when he feels like it's Drew Brees' last year. I mean, those kind of things. I think the writing's on the wall. I think it's appropriate to this is a time he's been injured the last couple of years. No reason to keep kind of going through this. It's also a good transition point with the Saints when we have Michael Thomas and Kamara signed to longer term contracts. So whoever we bring in can learn to play with those guys who are, you know, offensive firepower. I think it's a good time for the organization and for Breeze for us to see what's next. But I hope we win the Super Bowl this year.
Heath?
No, I agree 100%. When people started talking about that yesterday and all, it was, you know, to me, it was like, yeah, so what's the news? You know, I mean, right. I came into this season fully expecting that. And like Wesley said, you know, it's time. I love Drew Brees. Don't get me wrong. Love him to death. I can't imagine anybody replacing him as my favorite Saint for a long time to come. But the bottom line is I don't want him to be that guy. We've seen guys over the years that just don't know when to say when. And they wind up becoming a shell of them former selves and a mockery. And right. They get themselves broken up. You know, he's had 2 years in a row now where he's had a significant injury. And I'm not saying he's getting injured because he's old per se. What I'm saying is he's getting to that point in his life where he just don't need that anymore. Right. You know, you got through it pretty well. You're not all beat up and, you know, you haven't been broken up in little pieces throughout your career. Don't start now, you know. And so if it wasn't already a foregone conclusion before the season, I think now having a, you know, 11 broken ribs and a partially collapsed lung makes a guy at his age start to think, yeah, it's probably about time. You know?
Well, I think I'm basically just going to reiterate what you guys already said. But the thing that you said that Heath, that meets most closely with how I feel is that he's the soul of the Saints. And I'm like, you know, it's time to move on. I don't want to see him out there embarrassing himself, embarrassing the team, and things just, you know, just keeps getting bad. He's hanging on. I'd rather see him go out when you can see the decline, but he's still effective. He can still get it done. But I also, at the same time, I say that, and then I think to myself, like, man, I can't even imagine the Saints without Drew Brees. Like anybody else being a state, including Taysom Hills, who's like a fan favorite, you know, including a guy like Winston, who has all the talent in the world. And, you know, we've talked about it, and maybe we just, you know, probably are, you know, creating something in our head that he will take this team to keep the team on the same level. But the thought of either one of those guys or anybody else or a rookie as the starting quarterback, and it just kind of feels empty. So it's going to take a while before the feeling of, you know, I don't know how to even describe it. The Drew's gone and he's not coming back, and this is the team now. And, you know, so it's funny, but then after I think all that, I still say, but it's time. So,
yeah, I think the thing is he's not far enough to the point where, you know, like you said, we get into that point where it's almost getting embarrassing or whatever. You're starting to cringe, but he has declined enough that you're not, when he walks away, you're not going to be thinking, oh, what if he'd have stayed though? You know, he walked away too soon or whatever. So I think it's the perfect spot. You know, he's not too far one way or too far the other way. And at the same time, you know, I mean, I'll be honest. Like I said, as much as I love Drew Brees, I find myself looking forward to what's next, you know, to something different, I guess. You know, we know what we're getting with Drew Brees and Sean Payton and the Saints, what, 15 years now? And I find myself thinking, you know, man, you know, what happens we get a guy that's got a little more arm that's going down the field and we get some receivers that, you know, can get down to, I don't know. I guess, you know, it's time for a change is all I can really say.
Well, here's the funny thing, Heath, because I love that point. It's such a great point. It's like the unknown, like what might happen. And that's, I think, why everybody was so excited about Taysom Hill coming in, because it's like, man, he can run and he got a strong arm. We can go downfield. And then after about three games, they're like, man, when's Breeze coming back? Right.
Yeah.
But this time there's not going to be a Breeze coming back. So yes, I agree with that feeling completely. And I think that's kind of human nature, but I also think it's flawed. Well, except with the caveat that even if Breeze, and this is hypothetically next year, coming back is not really Breeze coming back anymore. It's an older, less capable version of Breeze that we're starting to see more. And now here's the next issue. And I'll make this point. And Wesley, sorry, I see Wesley has his hand up. He got something to say. is that who knows what's going to happen with this salary cap issue. If Breeze comes back and all of a sudden you can't keep this guy and keep that guy and a defense that's super solid, now all of a sudden, you know, like that's, I worry about that too. It's like, what I don't want to have happen is Breeze come back and look like a fool and have the media guys who always never want to give him his credit, who always never want to give him his credit, right? Who don't want to give him his due, saying, look, I told you, Wesley.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what's going to be. There's going to be a classic hindsight's 2020, no matter what. With that, if Breeze comes back and plays bad, it's, oh, we should have forced him out and told him he had to retire because we could have done better with whoever. And if whoever replaces him, we're like all excited and about this person has this big arm and all. And then we go 5-12 the next 2 years. It's like Breeze could have hung on for two more years and gone better than 5-12. I mean, there's, and if we win a Super Bowl this year, there's people who's like, well, if he won 3 Super Bowls, then that compared with his records is he'd be the greatest of all time. You know?
Yeah.
So there's always gonna be that. I mean, and we're always gonna question all. But I got invigorated. We talked about the future and all. Like Heath was saying, getting excited about it. It was pretty cool to me last year when Peyton signed a 5-year extension, knowing that Drew Brees is not gonna play those 5 years. I think that there's an excitement of Peyton knowing he signed a 5-year extension, knowing that that was going to outlast Drew Brees' career. I think he's got some excitement to young players and what he's going to do next and what it's going to look like in the future too. It's probably the good version of Brady and Belichick splitting. This is the, oh yeah, I'm going to outlast you in my career. Cause I think a lot of people thought that probably Brees and Peyton were leaving at the same time, whenever that was. So it's pretty cool to see Kamara, Peyton, and Michael Thomas still on the roster here, in the future and see what happens.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty interesting that you took into consideration when you said 5-13, I did the math in my head and I'm like 17 12, next year, there'll be 17 games, yeah, man. So 12. Well done. All right. So I don't know. You guys have anything else you want to cover? You want to give some final thoughts?
Go ahead, Heath.
I think we're going to be in good shape going into the Bears game. Like you said, I think we're just – I will say this now. Every once in a while, Trubisky does something that you go, wow, I see that's why they keep trying to hang on to this guy. Like they just keep trying and trying again because as bad as he can play sometimes he can look really great. Hopefully he doesn't have one of those games next week. But I think across the board the Saints are a better team. We already talked about the guys that are going to be coming back rested and invigorated that are going to make us better and everything. Next week really should not be a problem. At least in the NFC side, I think we match up pretty well. Green Bay would probably be the most team that I wouldn't want to play, I guess, just across the board. But even then, I mean, we lost to them the first time. Not by that much, and we weren't in the best shape at that point. And all, in other words, it wasn't like they were just head and shoulders better than us. And
no,
so I feel good about our chances here. The Saints just had, in the past, it's mostly been the Saints stopping themselves, right? We just came out and played really poorly last year in the wild card game against the Vikings. If the Saints come out and play the way the Saints are capable of playing, hell, I like the odds on the Super Bowl. It's on them, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I get it. I think the only team that I think that we can't beat and wouldn't be I don't want to say anything's easy, but what I'm saying is I'm not worried about anybody except for Green Bay. And quite frankly, early in the season, I'm like, Green Bay. And they just keep doing it. Sooner or later, you got to give them some respect for it. So, Wesley.
Yeah, there's not a game that I would not pick us in just because I think that, like he said, with our roster and our team, if it plays up to its potential, I think we'll beat anybody in the NFL. I really hope, yesterday, for example, we threw the ball 32 times. We ran the ball 30 times. I really hope we stay committed to the run. Yesterday was an excuse to get away from the run because we didn't have a running back on the roster, and we stuck with the run. Some of that, I guess, is easy to stick with when it's working. But we've ran the ball well the last few weeks. I really hope that going into the playoffs and having Kamara back, that we are running the ball, establishing that. I think it makes it easier on Drew. And I really would like in this Super Bowl run to see Drew just have one of those classic Drew games once. It would be nice to see it one time.
That Tampa Bay type game.
I hope we don't have to have it to where, like, it's just where we have to depend on him. But, man, I'd like to see one good, 2-minute drive to put us up by 2 scores, not to take the lead. A 2-minute drive to make a 2-score game. So right. It's not too much pressure. But I agree. I think there's a lot of reason to be confident going into this, and hope that combining the last two conversations, Breeze goes out with a bang.
All right. Well, I mean, hell, I don't know what to throw on top of that. But it's going to be interesting. You know what? If depending on how things go, we did a show on Monday. One reason I don't like doing a show on Monday is so much news comes out. So you never know. We might give you a bonus show later in the week. But if not, thank you, Heath, Wesley. We always appreciate you guys' support and listening to the show. So for Heath Elson-San, Wesley Coleman, Tomas Mauricio, I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast on the Dome Patrol Network. We'll talk to you later.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
I love this podcast, oh boy, don't waste time.